Hagun Erev Shabbos. Before I give my shmooze, I make sure to speak to Rabbi Rubenfeld to know what I should give on and what I should talk about. So he had a perfect three-hour drasha to give, but I'm not that good. I can't speak for such a short amount of time. But honestly, this week's parsha is a tremendous parsha, a wonderful parsha, interesting parsha. And at the very, very end of the parsha, it talks about what seems to be the greatest challenge for Avraham Avinu, the greatest test of Avraham Avinu, which is the challenge of the Akedah, the Nisayon of the Akedah, the tenth, some say it's the tenth and final test that Avraham Avinu had to deal with. Being told to bring up his son as a korban, being told, you know, his son, his only son, the one that he's going to be able to maintain the future of the Jewish people, he's gone. Bring him up, take him up as an ayla, and that'll be it. Can't imagine. We could try to imagine what Avraham Avinu was thinking at that time. The Midrashim do talk about the feelings that Avraham had as he was going towards Har Moriah, the place where he would do the Akedah. He was thinking, what's going to be with my people? What's going to be with my children? Some say he was crying a lot. It's a challenge. The challenge of the Akedah. Some say that life would be much easier if we started from the end and went backwards. If we saw the end of the story. You know, there are all those people who love spoiling a good book. You have a good book that a person's reading. They want to know what's going to happen at the end. And people love saying the ending of it. Like you. People love saying the ending. People love spoiling it. But knowing the ending of the story, it ruins the whole book. Some people might say, I don't even want to read the book at that point if I know the ending. Now, why is it? It's still action-packed. It's still interesting, entertaining. But if you know the ending of the story, it becomes boring. But yet, when it comes to life, people just want to know, how is it going to go? How is it going to end? What does this challenge mean? If Avram knew at the very end of the Akedah, he's going to be told, you don't have to sacrifice your son. That's not what I was asking you. Just a ram. Just put him up there, go through the motions, and bring him back down. Imagine how Avraham Avinu would have felt. It would have been an entirely different challenge. Not really a challenge at all. And if you look at your own life, and you see, you know what? This class is difficult. This day is difficult. I came home and I was expecting to be able to relax, and I'm told I actually have to do this. But if we have the ability to know, this is just a test. As Rubenfeld said to me, based on the Ramban, it's not a test that Hashem is testing you so that he can know, like our Chumash test, how well you actually know the material. It's a test for ourselves to understand how well we know the material. How well we're conditioning ourselves in this life. What are we really? On my room, in my dorm room, I used to have different sayings on the side. One of them was the famous line from Rav Gifter. Rav Gifter used to have, the story goes, Rav Gifter had three picture frames. And in one picture frame, it had one gadol. And in the left picture frame, it had another gadol. And the way the story goes is that the middle picture frame was blank. And it simply had the words in it, why not you? That's what he had. So I used to have on the side of my dorm room, almost like a girl's dorm room, I had it, why not you? Another thing I had there was, how do you want to be remembered? How do you want to be remembered? I thought it was an interesting thing to say. How do you want to be remembered? Because it implies two things. It implies that there are a lot of things that I do in my life that are going to be remarkable and that are going to be important. Sometimes we don't even recognize how important they are now. But another thing is that there is going to be uptime at the end for people to look back, especially you yourself, to look back at your life and wonder, how am I remembered? We know that a lot of old goyim look back at their lives and wonder and are concerned about their legacy. My legacy. What will be my legacy? I only have this kid. This kid's a spoiled brat. That's not a good legacy. There are elderly people who at the very end of their life disown their children because it doesn't reflect well on my legacy. How do you want to be remembered? It's a question of the tests of your life. When you look at the very, very end of your life and you reflect back, what were the important things that I did? I had a wonderful discussion in class this week. We were talking about money. Money, 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 money. Everybody loves some money. A lot of people like some money. A lot of money. They all want money. So I asked this wonderful, incredible individual. I said, you want a lot of money? He said, of course I want a lot of money. So I said, why? He said, you know, because of all the things that money could buy me. I want this comfort. I want a big house. I want all these things. So I said to him, you don't want money. You want a house. You want a car. You want comforts. So why do you keep telling yourself that you want money? In fact, it goes deeper and deeper than that. We don't even want those houses, things. What you really want is to be comfortable and not have anxieties. So if you were able to figure out a way to not have anxieties, to be concerned, you'd want that too. It's not about the money. But when a person gets to the end of their life and they reflect on everything, they're going to look back and they're not going to think, you know what, my legacy is $40, $50, $250 billion. If that is, I think that's pretty pathetic. A person going to look back, I mean, why did this guy with the funny hair, why did this guy run for president? It was all about his legacy. After all the buildings that he had his name on, that wasn't important enough for him. In fact, all those names are off the buildings at this point. They're gone. But the only thing that's important to him is his legacy. He was so concerned that he might be president for one term, and that would be it. And people remember him as the loser, the one who lost an election to a man of questionable relevance. So he had to come back because of his legacy. A nisayon, a challenge that you go through in your life, the akedah, it's all about showing you what is really, really important in your life. It's not about showing Hashem. Hashem knows you much better than you know yourself. It's all about trying to show yourself what I really am. The challenges, the daily challenges. Can I get up on time for Shacharis? What type of guy am I? When I'm in my classroom and somebody makes a mistake, somebody misspeaks, somebody by mistake stutters, somebody in a classroom says something really dumb, what type of person am I? Am I the person who jumps and tries to find the chance to put them down and make them feel bad? Or am I the person on the other side? Am I the person who, when that akedah happens to me, am I able to look back at myself and say, you know what? I'm so impressed. And you're allowed to be impressed. I'm so impressed with myself today. I go to sleep at night thinking, you know what? I'm not so bad. I'm actually a pretty good guy. And it's because I had an akedah today. I had a nisayon. I had a challenge that showed me who I really am. It's a remarkable thing. I want to speak about another thing. In the beginning of the parsha, Avraham Avinu recovers from his bris. He's recovering from the bris. The pasuk says in the very, very beginning that Avram, as beautifully laid by Rabbi Rubenfeld this week, Avram vayera elav Hashem be'ilene Mamre. He was in the plains of Mamre. And Rashi says, why Mamre? Who should nosamle eitzel a mila? Because he was the one who gave Avram advice about the bris mila. It's very strange. Mamre was one of Avram Avinu's talmidim. Gave him advice about the bris mila. What was the advice that he gave him? Hashem told him to get a bris. What advice did he need from Mamre? So Rav Moshe Wolfson, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Levracha, he says like this. He says that Avraham Avinu recognized that a bris mila, is the final separation between me and the entire world. It makes the Jewish people different than everybody else. In fact, historically, it might sound particularly strange, but historically, the Jewish people went out of their way to hide bris mila. Those people who had gone off, unfortunately, they tried to hide the fact that they had gotten a bris mila. That's what they did. Says Rav Moshe Wolfson that when Avram Avinu was commanded to get the bris. Avram was very, very concerned. Because two of his talmidim came up to him and they said, we're not of your children. Does that mean you won't be our Rebbe anymore? We won't have a connection with you anymore? You're not one of us. Now you're of the Jewish people. Elevated and beyond and separate from us. How are we supposed to relate to you? And Mamre said to Avram Avinu, Hashem said this is what you're going to do. And if it means that you're separate and beyond us from now on, then that's fine. That's the relationship the Jewish people are going to have with the rest of the world. And in fact, says Rav Moshe Wolfson, that because of that, Mamre became much, much closer to Avram because he recognized the status of the Jewish people, what the Jewish people really are, elevated and beyond. Having a bris means that you're elevated and beyond. You might say to yourself, what did I do astonishingly great in my life? Did I build a huge building somewhere? Did I influence the entire Jewish people? Did I start a movement? You have a bris. You're from a yid. You're separate. You're beyond. You're elevated above the rest of the people in this entire world. We all know there's a famous Gemara, David HaMelech. David HaMelech went to the bathhouse once, and it struck him that he has no mitzvahs. He has nothing. He's not wearing a tzitzis when he goes to the bathhouse. He has no yarmulke. Chas v'shalom, even imagine a yid without tzitzis and a yarmulke. But he has no tzitzis, he has no yarmulke, he has no tefillin. He was in a place where he wasn't really able to learn, and he was so concerned. What does he have? And he remembered he had his bris milah. What's he saying to us? When you take everything away from the yid, if chas v'shalom, he is left all by himself, at the very end, deep down, he is elevated and beyond. He is the greatest being on the planet. He does not have to copy anyone else. He does not have to be afraid of anyone else. When he walks around, everyone's watching him. You think they're watching you because they're putting you down. They're watching you because they look up to you. When you got those sitters sticking out, if you haven't been in such a situation yet, you will. I was once in upstate New York in Middletown Mall, Galleria Mall. And there was a Billy Bee's. It's a place for kids to go running around. And my kids, at this time, one of my sons was 5 years old, and he's running around with his sisters, and this very, very, very large woman comes up to me, and she says, I have to ask you a question. So I said, what's the question? What are those strings coming out of your son's shirt? And she says to me, I was about to answer. She said, no, I asked your son, but I should go ask your father. Okay, fine. What are those strings going out? What are you going to explain to her? Okay, you know, there are 613 mitzvahs, 613 commandments in the Torah, and these are the way that we remember our relationship with God that we have through the 613 commandments. This is it. She was like, you have a religious thing on you at all times to remember that you have a relationship with God? I'm telling you, she walked away as if she was like in a spacey mode. That's what she did. And this was I had to like look up to see her spacey look. She was very, 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 very large. But the point is that these people walk around the press. I was once in upstate New York. You can ask other people who have many more stories than I. I was another place in upstate New York, in Newburgh, New York. There is a tremendously long pedestrian bridge. I was walking across this bridge. I think I said this story. I was walking across this bridge. It was the hottest day in the entire world. I was walking, and as I was walking across, I was wearing my white shirt and black pants, sister sticking out, I was pushing a carriage, I was walking with my wife, and this big, hulking guy looks at me, and he says, it's nice to see some people are still wearing their uniform. That's what he said to me. So I had heard a shir from Rabbi Milstein, Rabbi Milstein's father, who should live and be well, the week before, about how people have to go do kiruv and bring everyone back, the Jewish people, and you have to bring them to do tshuva. So I was so excited. This guy is looking at me, and he says to me that it's good some people are still wearing their uniform. So, of course, I knew he was Jewish. So I asked him, I said, you know, are you Jewish? And he, of course, said,
no.
No, he was not. He was like a Protestant. He was from Scottsdale, Arizona. Yeah, he was not at all. He said he's just impressed. He's impressed while he was there wearing a short t-shirt and shorts and a little tiny backpack. He's wearing this huge hulking guy. He's wearing that I'm there dressed in uniform. I can tell you that any Marine in his uniform on the hottest day of the year, when the Marines are wearing their white dress uniform with the sword on the side, the guy feels like the greatest guy in the world. He's a Marine. That's something else. A Navy SEAL, he never complains that he's too hot. The guy doesn't complain. He has the sideways beret on top of his head, and he is there, and even if he has to carry 250 pounds worth of gear, he never is concerned at all, because at the end of the day, I'm a Navy SEAL. That's all the guy is. And guess what? The truth is, an athlete, when he wears that uniform, and he's getting a concussion every single day, and he's going to end his life with a stroke and hobble around like that. I remember defensive lineman Warren Sapp. Warren Sapp, go look him up. He was the biggest, toughest guy on the Buccaneers. And the guy was huge, and the Rams, I think, also. But the guy is huge. Now he walks around like this, shaking. But guess what? Every time he gets another concussion, and you have that quarterback who was on the field and doing the thing with the hands, every time he does that, the guy doesn't feel bad for a second. He feels a little sick, and he probably thinks he's dying. But he feels great, because he gets to be an NFL player from the age of, what, 22 to 36. And that's it. He's done. You get to be in uniform your entire life. Navy SEALs, by the way, they check them out of the Navy. They get into 18, and then they're out of the Navy before 40 also. If you're at 40, then surprise. But you get to wear a uniform your entire life. Walk around with tzitzis. Walk around with a yarmulke. I wish we could be like an Eretz Yisrael sometimes. You could walk outside in your talis and tefillin. It's a feeling of a high. Mamre was telling Avram Avinu. He told him, you get to have a bris. Don't listen to everybody else who says, be like us. What's that line? They hate us?
They hate us because they hate us.
Because they ain't us. Exactly right. A person should realize we're elevated, we're beyond, we're a step above. And we should have a beautiful